All right, but let's dive into Counter-Strike here. So we'll pull it out. So the first expansion for BattleTech. This one, you guys, was this how quickly after the limited did this come out? Because they were both in the same year, and I thought limited kind of launched in the early.
No, I'm going to disagree with you slightly because I think Limited was about October, November 96, and
Okay.
then Counter-Strike itself came out quite early 97.
Gotcha.
The expansion itself was 99 cards, which is about a third of the unlimited set in itself. And what Gustav and I have done of we've tried to rationalize things a little because last time I picked a bucket load of cards that I really liked and basically told him, let's review this lot. And he obliged. And this time we've been a little more, well, choosy, I suspect. We've picked out 10 command cards or 10 missions and 10 mechs is where we wanted to start. And I gave Gustav first choice and he went off and picked his five quite admirably. And me being me, I picked a couple and I picked a couple more and then I wanted to do that as well and that'd be nice and there's a few other things so we've actually got in total about 32, 34 cards. It's about a third of the set. So that's the plan to probably do them in three chunks of commands, missions, and mechs. And it's been said that it's quite a varied set. When it's great, it's great, and when it's not, it's awful. We'll see what everybody thinks, and you know these are just our opinions. If you like the card, take it, play with it, enjoy it. Don't do or be put off with it because we don't. So yeah.
And Travis, I don't think you're wrong when you say it came out at about the same time within a year, because I think it was within a year. I don't think it was like a year had passed and people had a year to play with
Oh,
limited
6 months.
before Counter. Yeah, it wasn't a year, so it was within the year period, 6 months or so before Counter-Strike released. So there was a lot of hype building up to the first release for the BattleTech universe. I think Counter-Strike didn't live up to it, but we'll see. Let's start with the review.
Awesome. So we're starting with command cards, and first up, going alphabetical order. So we have assassination.
That's right. Assassination is a unique killer, and this doesn't just include unique command cards. A lot of the command cards in the limited set sit there in the support row, and they're targets for Arrow 4. A lot of them have just one structure. But this subterfuge card, available only to the Inner Sphere because the clans aren't underhanded like that, allegedly, allows a scrap of any unique in play. So this could be a bullet. If your opponent has that Baron McKenzie's hammer out and there is no way to stop it from rolling fives and sixes over and over and over again, bam, take that bearer out. Or we'll see later on when we start reviewing some of these unique mechs, this can actually take out a unique mech as well.
Interesting.
It plays well with some of the later cards that come out that we're going to talk about, Sun Tzu Lao and Maximilian Lao's Legacy, because there's recursion here. And if you have an opponent who's playing a command heavy deck or a unique heavy deck, this is pretty fun card. Assassination gets a four for me with regards to construction. Hey, Mark, would you like to give them the gradients on our numbering on where these things
Oh,
rank?
yeah. Okay, we can go back and look at that. We have a ranking system of 1 to 10. One being really, really stay away from it, and I think our actual comment is feed that to your pet because it's not particularly useful. Five comes in at a reasonable average. It's a decent enough card. You can play around with it. It's usable. You might not put it in a tournament deck. I think when it comes to tournaments, we're talking eights and nines. And on top of that, there is the ranking of 10, which is practically godly. And I've now subtitled that All Hail Wizards of the Coast because it's such a great card.
Those cards usually ended up in the ban list, as I recall.
Well, one or two of them did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just hopping back to Assassination, it's an interesting card because it says scrap a pilot card or unique card in play. And obviously it came out with Counter-Strike, and at that point there were no unique mechs at all. I think Widowmaker was one of the first ones, and Yellow Wang in the Mercenaries expansion next. So at that point it was you know, heads on, go get that unique, whoever that is. And then they ruled later that it applies to mechs because it just basically kills a unique card. The problem with this 3 and 4p is arguably the buyout, and it got kind of rewritten later into a card that was called Unlikely Love Affair, which is a lot cheaper. So you tend not to see it so much. Unlikely Love Affair is probably a little more flexible and easier to pay for, especially if you haven't got politics. Okay. So it's an interesting one, definitely. Definitely in there if you might be playing only with the first couple of sets. Probably a sideboard card. I think 4 is about right.
And we had been playing the other day, and kind of this question came up because I was playing with Morgan Kell, you know, and that just, you know, that seems like obviously that's a powerful card when you get out. You know, what is the ways to deal with Morgan Kell? You know, because he's not even really on the board. Is he on the board long enough to even, he's not going to be on the board to even get hit by assassination. You know, what are you guys thoughts on that?
He can be, absolutely.
He can be, yeah.
You attack with Morgan Kell, I reveal assassination on your mission phase, and boom. Gotcha. It's not limited to a mission phase or my command phase or my construction phase. It's you put him down. Once he's on that mech, he can only be popped up during a mission. I can scrap him. Gotcha. If assassination is fully constructed.
Yeah, and that was where my lack of, you know, because I was understanding that the revealed had to happen during your own deploy phase. All right, so that's just kind of a rules clarification for me there. Perfect.
The other thing with Morgan is that most people put him on a mech attack and stick him back in the hand, but
right.
If they don't do that, they attack in a group or it's blocked, then he hangs around. Mm-hmm. So it's back to your situation where if he's on the table, yes, you assassinate him, basically.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was thinking more just kind of you plop them down, attack with them, put them back in your hand, and just keep doing that over and over. So
yeah.
All right, next card. We're moving Black Market Connections. You know, this one has stood the test of time.
Absolutely.
Quite an interesting card because I let Gustav choose first, and he didn't choose it, and I didn't choose it, and then I thought we probably should put that in there because it's that good. So this is why it's an both our choices.
It's probably the best, and I'm going to say best because War Funds is up there, but it's probably the best non-standard resource in the game because only Black Markets allows you to get what you have lost with BattleTech. Your stockpile is your life, and every time you take a damage, you lose a piece of your stockpile, which is a piece of what makes your deck unique and special to you. You built that. You constructed it of cards that you thought you wanted to play with, and you took damage, and you lost those cards. Black Market Connections gives you a way for your deck. It doesn't matter what your deck is. You know, we're not limited to Melissa Stein or Davian anymore. Any deck, Clan, Inner Sphere, you have the ability to go back into your stockpile and take that one card out that is necessary for that situation to still win the game. This deck, every tournament deck has this card in it. Every casual deck I build has this card in it. Just like many of those unique command cards, it gets scrapped by Arrow 4. One structure damage will take it out. It costs 2 to build because it has such a high value, but it's fantastic. And, of course, it is a resource card. It's not just a command, so Warfronts can actually pull it.
Nice. And what's, you know, when you're looking at kind of the quantities in your deck, you know, are there any kind of, you know, rules or considerations in figuring out how many of these that you want in there?
Most tournament decks, when you look at them, run 2 Black Market. The only time they run 1 Black Market is where they're playing a Steiner and they've got Melissa around. So the general rule of thumb is 2. There is one deck that I can think of that ran more than that, and that was actually the Mechless deck. And I remember when Peter Sundholm played Zvi Moshevitz over it. Zvi actually conceded a game because Peter had actually killed off all 3 of his Black Markets and there was no way for him to recycle the game, the cards he wanted in the game. He just gave up and restarted, said, you can have that one. Let's start again. There was no point in prolonging it and bringing it out.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, very, very powerful card. Very, very widely used. And as we've said, just those resources that you put 8 or 10 in your hand, in your deck, in order to make sure you've got one in your hand at the start. When you've got what you need on the table, you feed them to the BMC monster and bring back all the good stuff that you need.
Right. Rating?
It's a 10. It's a 10. I'd give it 11. It's off the charts.
Yeah, it's got to be a 10. If it's not, then it's an 11.
Right.
All right. Following up, another solid choice. We got double time offense.
One of my picks here. Very, very powerful in particularly big mech or logistics based archetype decks. It's a 4 with a 4L buyout. And it can get quite costly because every 2 counters above the base construction of 4 that you build with this when you reveal it, one of your mechs can untap and then you can then attack again. So the big mech decks where you send your Mana Wars over or your Massacaris or your crossbows or whatever else, they all survive. All the chump blockers sit in the middle and die horribly, and you're all tapped out. Use this card. You're running a big mech deck, so you'll probably have lots and lots of resources. Untap everything. There's nothing left on the board, and then you go and hit your opponent. It's one of those finisher cards. I think Michael considers it quite a good stalemate breaker. But if you're in that position, then hit them once, untap, hit them again, game over. Mm. So, you know, it's just making sure that you can survive with enough in order to finish the game out, basically. And at this point, you're probably looking at maybe anywhere from 20 to 30 cards out. Yeah. So if it's built right and you've got the resources to support it, you can be ending the game in, I don't know, turn 10, turn 12, turn 14, something like that. So very good card when used correct. Doesn't fit every deck.
I like how Mark talks about all the clan mechs that fit in with the big mech deck, but there are big mech inner sphere decks as well. I'm looking at you, Steiner, with your Thunderhawks and your Pillagers. Mm-hmm. A lot of L buyouts there, and they have the ability to double time offense as well. They resource brokers, advanced mech specialists. They have the ability to get those resources down, build the big mechs, and double time offense for the final push. Now, final push is one as well that can work as a stalemate breaker, but that's not in this set.
Gotcha. All right. So rating on that one up there.
It's good. It's an 8.
We got an 8.
Yeah, it's definitely tournament playable. I'd say 7 or 8.
Got it. All right, next one on the list, we got Earthworks Limited.
Another of my choices, I'm afraid. A very interesting card because it's a 2-cost with a 2-politics buyout and provides assembly, which seems quite weird. Mm. It's a resource, so pull it with Warfronts. Tap for a resource, great, okay, fine. But the benefit here is the tap and the second ability, which says reveal one of your mechs under construction. If that mech is within 2 resources of being fully constructed, activate it and use it during your deploy phase. So basically, it's paying 2 towards the cost of your mech or getting you out of 2. So what you tend to find is a lot of decks will run this alongside arms reduction. So you're close to constructing it, tap Earthworks, 2 in place, out you go. And then you can use your other 2 resources for something else. So you can turn out 2 mechs a turn quite happily with this. Allow only, but works really, really well in the right kind of swarm booster. It's a good card for me. It has opportunities. You tend not to see it so much in tournament play, but it can be fun and you can build a deck around it.
Yeah. Do you feel like there are other cards other than arms reduction really excels with?
Well, the thing with Lao is the sneaky Lao, as Chester called them. Lao has the potential for quite a good politics base. So you can quite easily run an ATP deck with a nice politics flavor. Mm-hmm. And if you're paying five for something like Death Commando Strike, which is a great card, but at five it's quite costly, you can still do that. And with this card, maybe drop a Centurion or something else, or a Vindicator Revised, or another mech on as well as your Death Commando Strike on each turn. So it just gives you that nice little boost in order to maintain that momentum.
Excellent. And that benefit, because it's a resource that it can be pulled with that war funds if you have that in there as well.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. How are we rating this, guys?
I like it. You tend not to say it so much, but I think it's still a good card. I think it's an 8, probably.
I think it's a 4. I don't think, unless you're having fun and playing with a Lao Swarm or Arm Reduction deck, I don't think it's a competitive card. But it's a fun card, and it's Lao. So when you're thinking about your Maximilian Lao's legacy, it's a Lao card you can spot.
I will say, too, it's an attractive card. The art on that is the color pops. I like it. A lot of attractive cards in Counter-Strike that just don't play that great. But moving on. So we got Fanatical Leader.
Fanatical Fruit Bat, as we call them over here. Rob Matthews, thank you for that one. Actually, quite a good little pilot card in the early elements of the game. A lot of the Inner Sphere Swarms would have a Fanatical Leader or two in there. Reasonably cheap at 2/2T. But as the swarms are attacking groups of twos or threes, he's giving each one of those mechs a +1 attack, which that's not bad at all. If you think of pushing the envelope is +3 at the expense of three to yourself, then it's quite hard to get that kind of bonus. He's decent, but overshadowed these days by people like Kai and Victor, who've got bigger bonuses and other features. But in his heyday, two or three of those in a nice little Inner Sphere Swarm deck, you'd actually get quite a bit of damage. The only problem being that obviously you can see it coming. Whichever mech's got the Fanatical Fruit Bat on, you know he's coming your way along with maybe two or three others. So you can kind of telegraph what's going to happen and your opponent can, you know, prepare for that. But decent enough for me. It's a 6.
I see him as an Inner Sphere pilot. It's interesting that the lore is a lore master, Colonel Ward from Clan Wolf, talking about Ulrich Kerensky. And Ulrich costs 10. We'll see him later on. But Ulrich costs 10, and this guy is a 2. And Ulrich was a great leader. This guy, it's an Inner Sphere only. You're not going to see this guy with clans. Clans don't need to attack in groups of tiny little guys. Clans attacks are pretty fantastic already. Gotcha. I say it's a 4.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at like today's play.
We think just in general, a card like this would play better in draft than in constructed.
Yeah, good draft card.
Yeah.
It's a good draft card. Yeah, I would give it a higher point scale, probably a 6 or 7 for draft for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, and it seems like that. I mean, any card that just has rare replacements, you know, seems like it's going to excel better in draft. You know, that where, you know, you can pull your Kai if you have those cards, but in draft you don't have that selection, so it fits well. All right, next one we got coming up, Field Construction Site.
It looks like I've got a monopoly at the moment, doesn't it, with these lot. Very useful little card, this. 0 cost resource. Pull it if you want with war funds, tap it for a resource, fine, but then you can then scrap it for 2 further more resources, so it gives you that instant boost. It's also very hard to get rid of. It's got 5 armor and 3 structure, so you're going to need 8 to kill it, and that's quite rare. So you know, it's a good card. You can use it, and I have when I created the Dash Daisy deck. This is the resource booster that you need. 0, tap for 1, scrap for 2 more, double time offensive, gets you 6, and you're starting to move into the right areas. The penalty is obviously the scrapping of the card. you lose that resource on the following turns. But if you're trying to push, then it's a good card.
I'm pretty sure it's double overtime that you're looking for, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for those new players, make sure on these cards that say, you know, that give you that option to scrap, you know, in addition to other abilities, make sure those new players understand that you can use that tap ability first and then scrap it.
Yeah.
You know, and so
same with Think Tank being the other good example of that.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I know kind of for me as a new player, when I was first seeing that didn't click. I just immediately went to do this or this and not do that and that. All right, how are we rating this, guys?
I like it. I rated it an 8.
I think it's an 8 or 9 in the right deck. It's a fantastic card.
Awesome. All right, next up we got Oda Hideyoshi.
Oh, Oda.
Yeah.
If only. So this is one of the ones I chose. This is a rare card that the structure and armor is inverse for what you would normally see in an Inner Sphere Command. Usually you'd see 5 armor, 1 structure. This is a 1 armor, 5 structure. So he doesn't die to Arrow 4. It'll take 5 turns of Arrow 4 before you take out Oda. But he gives you this mission-like effect with the detriment that you can't use any mission cards, so there's no surprises. If he didn't have the restriction of that second sentence, you cannot play mission cards during this mission, he could be fantastic for a Karita sneaky deck. But because you cannot play any mission cards, and your opponent can only assign 1 blocker, you can't do a Forge Mission Ardors. You can't do an overrun. There's no way to play a trick to get your unit back. You can do that double time offense, though. I rank him a 1. This is one that if my cat eats, I don't care.
Mark, you have thoughts there?
Yeah. As Gustav said, that you cannot play mission cards is quite a pain. I think if it was you get -1 initiative and then you could bump it with a pilot or jump a couple of mechs, it would be a lot more useful. But yeah, it's kind of one of those things that's completely counterintuitive to play. If he's going to chump block with 1 and I'm going to attack with 3, then I either need to come back after blitzing the ground with it, or I need to get the chump blocker out of the way so I can hit the target. And he kind of prevents that. Hmm. It's Harry Kiri in a card.
Okay. Are there other cards out there with that kind of, you know, that inverse structure armor? You know, do we think that there's a reason for that? You know, I think it was just an apparent error, you know, where they flipped that?
Could be.
Yeah. It's really odd that they give him 5 structure and 1 armor. He's an odd duck, Oda.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with him in the lore either. I don't know if there's some reason in lore that he would be given that. But as we'll see later with the nice guy, misprints happen, right? All right, next up, we got Operations Liaison. Oh, that was a rank 1. I think you guys both agreed on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, we got Operations Liaison coming up.
Another of my choices, maybe I'm being a little too utopian here. I quite like this card. I'm not saying you're going to put 6 in a deck, but I think if you're looking for the odd extra card just to round your deck out, then this one is actually quite useful. The P and the L buyouts tend to push it towards free deploy and politics kind of decks. And that's where it's actually going to have quite a benefit, because it allows you to look through the top 5 cards of your stockpile and put one of those in your hand. Which is, you know, pick a card. Which one's your fancy? And also, you restock the others. Now, there's pros and cons with that. If I've got something that will draw them from my deck, doesn't matter where they are, if they're on the bottom, like War Funds, restock a Think Tank or something other like that. And in addition, I know where they are. Now, that may or may not be a good thing. You know, if you're looking for that killer mission or you want that black market connections, maybe restocking it's a bad move. Maybe if I've got a War Funds, I'm not worried I can pull that out. But it does help you propel forward. And just like Oda, it's a 1/5. that's got to be worth an extra mark.
And that restocking, that's a rule that's not clear, kind of just in kind of the original rules. You know, restocking, that is going to mean that you're putting it back in the deck and reshuffling. Am I correct on that?
Goes to the bottom of your stockpile.
Bottom.
Yeah.
Of the
stockpile. So you're not. You can actually do card counting in Battletech if you. And there's nothing to prevent you from counting your deck at any time. You know, obviously face down. So if you know where your cards are as you've restocked. And there are ways to ensure with a really small deck, and Mark might share this deck with you all at some point in time. There are ways to ensure that you're going to be getting the cards you need at a certain point in time. And this card is one of the ways you can do card counting and know where you're at. Now, of course, your deck is your life. So when you're thinking, hey, can I take this 5 with an overheat for 2? That's 7 cards. Where's that going to put me on the card that I need? But Operations Liaison, there is card advantage in this. For one resource, once you get them in play, you're getting one card out of the top 5 into your hand. When you think of other cards out there that let you draw a card and the cost of drawing a card, Hidden Reserves is the most common. It's a 9 or a 10. We're going to see that later on. But some of those operations that allow you to draw a card at the beginning of your turn, they take forever to have a payoff. This is immediate. If you're willing to pay the 2 plus the 4 politics, 2 logistics buyout, you can pay one more and immediately get a card in your hand that turn. One of the top 5 that you have chosen. That's a pretty good deal. I think it's a 5 or 6.
Mark, you're on the same page there.
I rated it as a 6. Yeah. It's one of those cards I like. I don't think I use it as often as I'd like to, but I went for 6.
Got it. And so moving on, we're bringing artillery in, kind of into this discussion. So we got Thumper Battery. As I recall, there were 2 similar thump, kind of artillery type pieces in this set, but yeah, let's talk about the battery in this one.
Probably me trying to all encompass the state of the game and what was going on and everything else here. Thumper Battery, 2 resources, 2 munitions, 2 logistics. So a kind of artillery theme. Tap, deal 2 damage to 1 site. Okay, Oda might take one and maybe my Operations Liaison would take 1 damage. But when you look at something like Field Construction Site or even a base resource, which is a 4-3, it's just going to plink off the armor and go nowhere. So the only real target for this is arguably a car under construction or the stockpile. Pinging the stockpile for a couple every now and again is okay, but it's a 0-3. It's dasher bait effectively in that respect. And when you look at it compared to something like an Arrow 4 doing 1 structure, you think, well, why am I paying all that extra? I'm not getting enough bang for my buck out of this. I put it in to highlight why people choose Arrow 4 and also don't play with this effectively. If you want to do an artillery deck, there are arguably better themes for it than cards like this.
Thumper is a terrible card. I would always rather have a 2-cost mech that had armor, structure and attack over this, even a slow mech, just because it's so restricted in what it can do. It's got no armor. It dies to a turn to a Daishi or a dasher. A little Spanky can come out and kill this. This is an example of why people were disappointed in Counter-Strike cards like this. Yeah. I say it's a 1.
Don't play it. Tactical Nuke coming up.
Oh man, talk about a stalemate breaker. Talk about a table flipper in multiplayer. Oh my goodness. So this is the final burn card. And when you look at what it says, it's not intuitive of how it plays out. So it's scrapped when revealed, just like most great command cards are. Each player's stockpile receives 1 damage for each construction counter above the cost of tactical nukes. So just a plain reading, you would think, well, everybody dies. And if everybody has the same amount of stockpile left, I guess it's a tie, right? Well, a Radahn clarification, it deals all of its damage to you last. So if there's 6 people in play, just go around left to right, and you're the last person that receives the tactical nuke damage. You can still win this game, even if you have the least amount of cards in your stockpile. And it's the one-for-one damage, which is the best damage. A lot of damage out there when you look at some of the limited cards are for every two cost above the base construction, this deals one damage. This is one-for-one. And that's the best kind of damage you can do when you're thinking about building a mech. I pay one for one attack, one more for one attack. This is for every one above cost of two, I'm going to be dealing an extra damage to my opponent. This isn't going to see play in a tournament where you're playing against another person and there's not a lot of build-up and, you know, table talk going on about I won't attack you if you don't attack me kind of stuff. But in a multiplayer game, people build up giant cards under construction, and it could be just an assembly down there as bait. And who knew who was building the tactical nuke on the side and just burned everybody out. So I think it's one of my most fun multiplayer cards. In construction, I wouldn't play it, but I still give it a five because I like the card. I like how it plays.
Yeah, when I read it, it did strike me. You know, I read it right. It was like, oh, well, it's just kind of biding your time until you have more cards than your opponent. And I did. That was not even knowing the rule that you you deal damage to yourself last. And so it seems like almost a not fun card. It's just a matter of just kind of biding your time, and you know, as long as people are, I mean, and we talked in kind of the earlier episode how it's not, you know, always a great idea to be you know, going after cards under construction if they have more than I think one, you know, or so counter on them. And so it just seems kind of like a one of those, you know, auto win cards if you get it going.
I think there's a couple of things for me. First of all, I just had this crazy vision of this little hoplite turning up, attacking this card under construction and setting off a tactical nuke, which I thought could be quite funny. But the other thing is, what are the end conditions? Now, I always thought that the end conditions or the game ended where you could not draw two cards. So if we've all got five cards each and I set off a tactical nuke and do five to everybody, my turn ends, the next person can't draw two cards, and that's the end of the game. So I would actually still be alive at that point, even though I'd actually got nothing in my stockpile. I'd have to go and read it and check it. But that would clarify with Gustav about it dealing damage to you last. If there is a criteria that says the game ends when there's zero in the stockpile, I always thought it was when you couldn't draw two cards. Because at that point, you can win when the guy's only got one card in his stockpile and he can't draw twice. But I'm going to have to go and check that.
Actually, I got the rule book. I'll read it while you guys are chatting.
What did you rank it, Mark?
I'm not sure if I'd quite go for five. I think I might have gone for a four. I like the one-for-one. I like the multiplayer dimension aspect of it. I think it got superseded, in my opinion, with Time Bomb in a later expansion. But both could be fun.
So I think Quarter of Fire is another one that in a 1v1 gets a lot more play.
Corridor is a lot more direct opponent damage, though, isn't it? It's saturation, yep. Bombing, but on a 1 point for one counter.
Yep. One for one is best damage, yep.
Yeah, this is a different type of card in that respect for me. I mean, you build your saturation up and just send it off, or corridor up and just send it off against whatever it is you want to destroy, normally the stockpile. This thing just wipes everything out in a radius. So, four or five for me.
Okay. We have our first pilot from Commander's Edition next, Vlad. He is a target for assassination, of course. Vlad of the Wards. He is a hunt down.
Is that a typo that he doesn't have armor and structure?
Pilot.
He's okay. A pilot, so he's going to go on your mech. There, he's not going to give an armor or structure. He is a pilot that doesn't give any attack. He does give you plus one initiative, no attack bonus. So that's a minus. But he has a built-in hunt down ability. And later on, there were certain types of units that were basically unhuntable in vertical takeoff and landing. but he can attack any mech regardless of speed. He was eclipsed by single combat that came out later on. He is a sideboard card at best now. I don't think he's going to see a lot of regular play. He has a new rendition of his uniqueness that sees play from Crusade set. But I'd give him a 4 in today's world. Early on, the ability for the Clan Wolf especially to hunt down your opponent's units, he might have seen a little bit more play, but single combat, and he's got a better version later on. So I'd give him a 4.
And the final choice, Gustav.
Yes, oh, my final choice. I was
heartbreaker.
This is a heartbreaker for those of us who are huge fans of the lore and the universe. Ulrich. Ulrich is a sensitive guy. We really care a lot about him, and they did not do him justice. At 10 base cost plus 6 politics, he's an overwhelmingly poor opportunity cost of your resources. He is not going to pay for himself for at least 2 turns, maybe even 3 turns. He does not die to one-shot arrow 4. He's got at least 2 structure. But if you're playing with a later set in Crusade, he's a great hit for Hasty Alliance, because if you can get a 0-cost Dr. Ariel Reed down for 2 more, you can get Ulrich down as well if you're playing an Alliance-based deck like Arc Royal Defense Cordon or something like that. He plays well in a build-up deck in multiplayer. So I'm looking at you, Tactical Nuke, thinking about doubling down on all those resources for 1-for-1 damage. But just another card, when you pull him in a Counter-Strike booster, you're like, oh, what a disheartening. He is not going to see competitive play. I'd rank him a 3.
Yeah, he was, I'm kind of, trying to get my own kind of, custom cards set up. I'm trying to get a graphic designer to kind of design them and kind of plug them in. He was prime in there. When I get those cards up, I definitely want to kind of get a recosting of all of them to make them actually viable. So Ulrich and the Planets, the Poly Art off of, how it is, Lost Destiny, I think it is, of him kind of sitting up, standing in front of the presenter with kind of the Planets. I'll show the art here for people, but yeah, it's such an amazing character, and to see him kind of unplayable in the game is not fun.
If he was costed about half that, if he was at a 5, I think he could see play, but at 10, that's overwhelmingly well poor performance to be able to get that you'd say momentum or tempo back to invest 10 in somebody who's not going to pay for himself for probably 2, maybe 3 turns.
Got it. If do you like that ability? Like if you could design that card, Gustav, would you give him a have you thought about making a different ability, something a little bit more thematic?
I think his resource. I think if he gave you resources plus you untap. So if you could pay 1 resource, untap all of your resources, or tap and gain 4 resources or something like that, gain 3 resources. So if he had 2 abilities, I think it would be more thematic, and if he was half his cost. So tap, gain 3 resources, or tap, untap all your resources, and had like the double option, I think it would be better. But just be able to untap all your resources. That's a lot to pay for that.
Yeah. Well, I think, one thing with that is that it's Command Unique and Clan Wolf. All right. So this is pre Ilkhan. So maybe kind of that next custom card is the Ilkhan, tag instead of a Clan Wolf tag. But
well, he is Ilkhan of Clan Wolf. He does have the little dot down below. So they're calling him Ilkhan is what he's doing. It's not just Khan. So you're already stuck with this.
Yeah, they're so inconsistent with Leo Showers. They he doesn't have a clan affiliation, But consistency, man, these card designers, what are they doing out here?
Do you think about it, Mark?
I can see a lot of clan players opening Counter-Strike and seeing that and thinking, what the hell were they thinking?
How did they do that to us?
Where does this come from? Yeah. I agree with Gustav about he halved the cost and he's playable. 1 or 2 abilities, yeah, maybe. Get rid of the politics cost as well. If you want to see him on the table, get rid of the politics costs, because Clan don't do politics costs. very well.
Logistics, maybe, though. Logistics. I think a logistics buyout would be reasonable.
I was thinking tactics, but there you go.
Yeah, tactics, too. Tactics would be fantastic. You'd see, at 5T, or 5 cost in like a 6T buyout, and the double tap, untap all your resources, or tap and gain 3, he would see play. I think that would be a good rework for you there.
I think at the time of Counter-Strike, he was one of those binder fillers. And at the time, I'd probably even put him as a 1. I think now with some of the later expansions and sets and other things, there is potential, but it has to be the right potential. So,
Nobody wants to pay 10 for him. Nobody wants to pay 10. He's got to be a hasty alliance tag. Tag, hey, you're in.
If I've got 10 resources, I'm sorry, I want a Mad Cat, or I want a Man of War, or I want a Gladiator, or I want something.
I want a Masakari.
Or I want 4, 2, and 3 cost mechs, or whatever else it is for my 10 resources.
Yeah.
10 for him is
And man, that is ugly art too. It's just not an attractive card
either. It does look like the guy who painted it only had the swamp color palette left.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sickly green.
Nothing good there. Even Vlad. Vlad's art. Vlad looks like kind of he'd be a romantic interest for the Tiger King. With his kind of his wolf thing and his chest shot.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, let's kind of end the Counter-Strike commands on that.